You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where.
Welcome to our house on a Thursday morning. Yeah, just to show you how far I have my head up my ass this morning, I just took the garbage cans out to let my whole neighborhood know that I don't really know what day of the week it is. But do you think I'm going to go back out there and bring it back in? No, that ain't happening. So what I want is, you know, the competitive guys on the block, like, he's got his trash cans out before I do. What the hell? What's going on? He never does that. Went to dinner at a friend of mine's house last night. His wife's a teacher. Well, let me back it up a little bit. So, number two daughter, number one in your heart, Colleen. She gets drafted into doing beginning swimming at her high school, right? I would categorize her as a proficient dog paddler. So, Colleen, you know, she says, hey, Dad, I'm going to do this. I said, okay, stick your face in the water and go. She's like, all right. I don't really like that, though. Okay, she's a novice swimmer, but she's not bad. So they need an extra person on the relay. Colleen swims in her first meet yesterday. So I go there. I missed the race because I actually was working out. And then I tried to cut my workout short. And then at the end of my workout, I swim. Yeah, let me tell you, if you want a good workout, and I've said this before, but hop in a pool and hop in a pool and do sprints in the pool. Whatever the length of the pool is, just bust it out. See how that works out for you. And then take about 60 seconds and then bust it out the other way. And do that, start with 10 repetitions of that. Take you about 20-something minutes of sprinting in the pool. Yeah, you ever get out of a pool and sweat? All right, well, you're about to. So anyway, so I do that, and then I get in the car, snake my way over to Collins High School, walk in, and already done. So standing there, talking to my former spouse, the lovely Susan. So we're sitting there talking, and guy sees us, and he has like the high school outer thing on, and he says, "Are you calling his parents?" And I immediately like, "Who wants to know, right? Because you never know, you might owe people money, so or she might." So no, we say yeah. She said, and he says very nice things. And, so what do you do here? Oh, I'm one of the security guys. Oh, you carry a pistol. And, he goes, I want to, you know, I told him. And I said, well, what's the deal with the school resource officers? What's the school district going to do? Not really sure. We've got an officer that's here all the time. I said, okay, so there's 38 schools in the district. What about the other 37? He says, yeah, he said, it's a problem. And I said, so what's the plan? And he says, well, they're kicking around some ideas. And I kind of gave him Mike's, you know, suggestion. Actually, I kind of went off on him. But this is after. I didn't go off on him until I asked him this. And he said, you know, well, I was in the military. And Susan says, what branch? And he says, Marine Corps. And she points at me. She said, we're a Marine family. And I'm like, what's up? Boom, right? So we do the handshake. Now we're bros. So I said, MOS? He says, I was an 0811. I said, oh, man. Got a less than manly MOS, did you? So with that, he like looked like, whoa. I'm like, yeah, you know it's about being a grunt. If you ain't grunts, you ain't shit. Yeah, that's dedicated to all you Amtrakers out there. So anyway, so we start talking, and I said, and I gave Mike's suggestion, and I said, do you know how many guys that are retired would volunteer to do it for free? Come up here a couple days a week, 4 or 5 hours, hang out, help you guys out. That have had over 15 to 20 years of you know, making their living with weapons. You know, so set up a POI that they got to go through. Set up a series of psychological, financial tests, whatever you want, however you want to litmus test them. And create your own cadre they used to call it in San Diego, RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol. And they had cars and they had radios. And they went out and they augmented the police department, snitching on everybody. Yeah, we got McNamara with a 10-4 out here. I don't even know what 10-4 is. It's the way I know. It's the way they say Roger. But he goes, no. He said, I know. He said, look, I'm one of those guys. You know? Made my living like that, and I would, you know, I'd be happy to help. He said, I want to get paid, though. So, anyway, so then later that night, we go to dinner, and, you know, my friend's wife's a teacher. And my point consistently is, as to all you school board members out there, and all you parents out there, too, if you aren't pressuring your school board to do one of these things, okay, then you are failing, okay? Then I am failing, okay? And they are, one, hire somebody with a weapon to be at every school the entire day, okay? I'm sorry that that's the way the world is, but that is the way the world is, okay? Okay, two, if you look at me and say, I don't have the money to do that, then two, create a volunteer program, right? Get somebody to design it for you that has the shooting that they have to go through, that has the mental health testing they have to go through, and whatever other background check you want to go to hire volunteers, okay, if you don't have the money. And then three, you be the school district in the nation that begins to pressure your state and the federal government and be a leader in that area. Because the bottom line, to quote Andrew Pollack, it's about safety in the schools. No other issue. Okay, and you'll hear from him today, probably instead of one of our commercial breaks. Okay, because like I said, I don't feel good if you don't hear his voice, and I don't hear his voice. Okay, it's his thing is 3 minutes and 45 seconds long, and it's about equivalent to one of our breaks. So guess what? Andrew Pollack's going to be one of our breaks today. But it's important because, and here's the key thing. School districts, the next school board that has to deal with this is going to have to look at those parents that come in front of it at some point and ask them, why didn't you protect our kids after all that was done? After everything that was done, the president having people to the White House, marches, after all the hullabaloo, Florida enacting legislation to harden its schools, okay? Why didn't you do what you're sworn to do? And the most fundamental thing you're supposed to do is, when I go pick up my child, I come to school, not to the morgue. So, you know what? It was interesting because there was universal. I just created a word. There was unanimous or universal agreement that if you swear an oath in this country, you got to live up to it. And so putting your hands up. And so the question is, where is the teachers union in all of this? Well, they want to make sure that teachers don't get armed, blah, blah, blah. What are you for? Not what are you against? What are you for? Where are they? Right? Where is the National Association of Public Educators or whatever national association? Where are they saying that we believe these are reasonable and prudent, but there's going to be many school districts who don't? For instance, do you think La Jolla High School doesn't have an armed cop the entire time? Do you think Palos Verde High School doesn't have an armed cop? Do you think Westwood High School doesn't have an armed cop? Do you think Brentwood High School? Right. Do you think those schools, they have whatever they want because they live in high rent districts? Because those school districts have money. Do you think Laguna Niguel High School doesn't have an armed cop? You're crazy. But in my daughter's school district, 38 schools have 4 community resource officers in it. Okay, so I'll do the math for you because I'm that kind of guy. 38 minus 4 is 34. That means 34 schools got nobody. So you're playing an odds game there. What are the odds? It's going to happen. And again, I said this about decision makers in combat. It would be fitting, right? It would be fitting if when you make the mistake, you pay for it. Would you roll the dice with your own kid's life? Would you? Probably not, I'm thinking. Probably not. But it doesn't go like that. So, anyway, just my life over the course of the last 24 hours, to include taking the garbage out on the wrong day. But let me tell you, that's the way it is today. I'm not worried about it. We're going to talk to James Ferguson today. And he has created, former artillery officer, speaking of artillery officers, former artillery officers, yeah, second to none except the infantry. Okay, he was up at the Kajaki Dam. If you listen to the battlefield study a couple weeks ago with Joe Patterson, Captain Type, United States Marine Corps. So if you listen to Joe, he mentioned the Kajaki Dam. Well, Ferguson was up at the Kajaki Dam, and they got it on a little bit up there. Yeah. So anyway, he's come back, got out of the Marine Corps, and doing good things. So we're going to talk to him today. And he started an organization called Warrior Reunion Foundation. Now, I'll tell you, it's kind of a circuitous story. Circuitous, how about that? And then I'm going to tell you a little joke I played on my friends this morning. So, and because it involves the gunner. You'll enjoy it too. So, anyway, I'm in Iraq in 2004. One of the guys I work with every day, I'm a major, is a lieutenant. He's Brigadier General Kelly's personal security detachment platoon commander. So he's an arty guy. We're not shooting artillery, except maybe they had a couple tubes over there, so they didn't need a whole lot of people. And so what do we do with the artillery guys? Because they can deploy. We need bodies. You're going with us. So I think he was with 211 or 311. One of those two. One of those 11s he was with. So anyway, Dan Robertson, first lieutenant, motivator. So, and he's a funny guy, and we get along. So Robinson, he falls off the earth for the last, like, 14 years. Yeah, no kidding. Just like, and so then I get, like, a Facebook message from his wife. Hey, Dan would like to, and that was like 2 years ago. And then about 2 weeks ago, I get this odd number. And part of the country that I'm familiar with, so I thought, well, yeah, that's probably somebody I know. Hello? Sir Dan Robertson. So after I unloaded on him, he says, I deserve every bit of it. I said, you don't need to say that. Of course you do. So this is just like, shut up about it. Take it. All right? And he said, hey, I want you to meet a friend of mine named James Ferguson. And he said, in fact, you know, he's heard your radio show. I guess, you know, he said he started this thing called the Warrior Reunion Foundation, and we had a reunion. Now, Dan Robertson thinks that, you know, in addition to being Kelly's PSD guy, he would call himself kind of an aide, but he wasn't an aide. And I used to remind him of that. This is General Kelly's aide. You're not an aide, okay? Aides go through a selection process. You were just excreted over here by your battalion, okay? So don't lie to people. You're not an aide. Do you have a gold braid? No, sir. All right. So anyway, Robertson, he was the platoon commander, if you've seen the HBO special, Taking Chance. Dan is the platoon commander that writes the letter in that movie. Actually wrote it in real life. So, evidently gets in touch with Ferguson, and they have a reunion of his guys from Iraq, and Ferguson kind of puts it on. And so what they do is, you know, Ferguson has these things you do that promote staying connected, that promote, you know, that are a little bit therapeutic but fun, and Robertson said it was awesome. Said absolutely awesome. So I met James Ferguson, and so you're going to meet him today. So in keeping with on Thursdays, try to do some type of either employment, healing, or whatever theme, you're going to hear Ferguson. And then later on, he's going to come back, and we're doing a little battlefield study about the Kajaki Dam, which was kind of a pretty interesting place at the north end of Sangin. So then the gunner's going to go on. Okay, so let me tell you my little joke this morning. So yesterday, the gunner tells me, or a few days ago, probably I said it during the program, let me not forget this. If you didn't listen to the battlefield study from yesterday, Koh Tang Island, write it down, okay, and go ahead and make sure that you listen to it. So it's awesome. And again, I'm just going to tell you this. Koh Tang Island, 1975, I was one of the bozos who looked at that operation, and if you would ask me about it, I didn't know that much about it. I knew it was about the Mayaguez and the crew and recovering the crew and the ship and blah, 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 blah. What I didn't know was that those guys from the start were set up to fail by the National Command Authority, by the Air Force command that was assembled, that didn't give them intel, didn't attend the confirmation brief, all the basic shit that we would say, yeah, that's kind of required, never co-located with them, right? We're all together in one spot, talking the same language. So all the things that we take for granted today, we didn't do joint ops back then. So, yeah, I would have been one of the bozos who would have said, oh, yeah, that's the op that they left the three Marines behind on. And if that's your understanding, like it was mine, then shame on you, okay? What the Marines of 2nd Battalion, 9th Marines, the airmen who absolutely fly the living shit out of their CH-43s, although they had never done this type of mission, although they did air search and rescue, okay? Not normally go, you don't go into hot LZs, much of it over the water, you know? So that's what they did. And then there were some of the 53s were the ones that used to pluck the astronauts out of the water. These guys are going to do combat inserts in defended LZs. Yeah, hello. Anyway, the story is amazing. And then the other story is, piece of the story is the USS Coral Sea is involved in it, but the USS Harold E. Holt and the USS Wilson both distinguished themselves mightily in their participation, especially the Wilson is amazing. Their CO monitors the VHF net, brings his ship in 1,000 yards off the coast of this island, and lets 176 5-inch rounds rip into the island. He launches his gig, right? The one that takes him to Libo? Yeah. He launches his gig with a 50 cal on it. And the gig proves instrumental because when the last helos are coming in, and the last Marines run for it, there's nobody suppressing, right? Except the 50 cal from this boat. So the, from his gig, right? That's big balls Navy right there, man. That's big balls Navy. So anyway, that's where the Navy used to be. Right? It's not that way anymore, and they need to get back to it. And I mean, hopefully they will. Hopefully they will. With the Secretary of Defense sticking his foot up their ass, I will tell you this, they better. So anyway, if you didn't hear that yesterday, I would tell you, by all means, listen to it. Dan Hoffman was second lieutenant and joined us for about 2 hours, not only talking about the operation, but also at the end, he talked about the devastating effect of learning that they had left 3 Marines live on that island, that it had on him, and the tailspin it sent him to the point where he's just laying in bed, and the only thing he got out of bed for was to go to his Marine Corps League meeting, which he says ultimately saved his life. And so, again, by all means, listen to it. And what's ultimately ironic about it is, after Vietnam, right, this is 1975, so our involvement winds down after 1970 and very much after 1972. So there's no combat experience in 2-9, except just a handful of guys, company commander, one of the squad leaders, you know, so most of, you know, Marine Corps, 60% under the age of 26. So within 3 or 4 years, most of those guys are gone, right? Other than NCOs that come back and whatnot. So, in the aftermath of Vietnam, President Ford, you know, aftermath of Vietnam, aftermath of Watergate, United States is just on its ass as a nation, right? President Ford and Henry Kissinger, the Secretary of State, are looking for some place to show American resolve and strength as kind of a message to the world that, you know, hey, we're not going anywhere. We're still here in spite of Vietnam. So the Mayaguez gets yoked up by the Cambodian, won't even call it a navy, by the Cambodian military. So with a crew of 40. And now we're going to see, the fear is we're going to see this crew paraded on TV. America's going to look like chumps again. Yada, 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 yada. So let's go get this thing. You'll listen to it and you'll hear how they did it. But these guys were set up for certain failure. They were absolutely set up for certain failure. And it should have been another national embarrassment. But the courage and selflessness of these Marines sailors and airmen is what makes the Mayaguez appear to be a success. It is an absolute shit show. It should have been a failure, but it, were it not for the bravery of these young Marines. And one of the most amazing feats when you listen to it is this helicopter pilot named, you know, Bob Blau. He's never landed on a ship in his life. He lands his 53, he doesn't even land it. He sets it down kind of, sort of, while the ship is underway, right? The Harold E. Holt, on the Holt's small, right, helipad in the back. It's a destroyer. It ain't big. It's not an amphib. Okay. And he's flying a 53. So he's got to set it down. The ass end's hanging off. He's got to keep it moving because the ship's moving. And he can't clip, right, anything on the ship. And he's never done it. And it's at night. The reason he sets it down on the Holt, because the Holt's 5 minutes off the coast, and he picks up the second to the last load, and the last load, right, on the radio, says that they're in danger of being overrun. So he knows he's got to get his ass back there quick. The trip to the Coral Sea is 15 minutes there and back. So he makes his own decision. I'm going to land on this ship. I'm going to get these guys out, and I'm going to go back and get the last guy. Yeah, shit like that. So, anyway, make sure you listen to it. I'll from Ohio, man, Koteng Beach Club. I listened to it last night, mesmerized. What a shitstorm. Not surprising, though, given it was 1975. It's criminal that the Marine Corps couldn't find a way to keep Lieutenant Dan in a leadership position. He had a lot to offer. I'm ordering that book, The 14-Hour War. Yeah, he at the end of the interview, I asked him, give us things to read. You know, I'm sure you've obviously read a bunch about it. I will tell you though, if you want a relatively quick read, if you go to the podcast page for it, and again, we're changing. If you can't tell, if you've been there this morning, the podcast page is changed a little bit. So we're changing the theme up on the website, so you'll get a chance to check it out. But it'll evolve over the next few days as we tweak it. Anyway, podcast editorial page, if you click on that, if you click on Battlefield Study 29 on Koh Tang Island, blah, 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 you'll go to the page and then scroll down. At the bottom, you'll see Major Mark Toll, USMC, wrote an outstanding paper on the Koh Tang Island operation while a student at Marine Corps Command and Staff College. You can find that paper here. If you click on here, you'll go to Mark Toll's paper. Yeah, it's about, how many pages is this thing? 54 pages. Okay, so if you take out the introduction, the table of contents, that's about 3, and then, so it might be 40-something pages. But it's riveting reading. Double space, so it's probably 20-something pages to read. I would recommend it to you. It'll give you a good overview, and you'll wind up shaking your head. And if you use the maps that I put up on the website, and you use Toll's paper, you listen to the interview, yeah, you'll sit there and just shake your head. Anyway, my thanks to Dan Hoffman for doing that. It won't be the last time you hear from him either. There's different pieces. I need to track down Bob Blau. He's still around, so I want to interview him. What the hell was he doing? And again, Hoffman said Blau should have been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. I want to say they started with 15 helicopters. They ended with 3. Blau's had a fuel line blown out that they duct taped and clamped and then got it back up in the air. Yeah. Bob Blau. So, anyway, with all of that said, before we check the news, good morning to you. On a Thursday, again, not sure why I took the trash out, but I did. Not, the United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning to you. just wrote myself a reminder. I forgot to tell you my Gunner story. Yeah, you got to hear how I tricked the schmoes this morning. Well, I'll tell you real quick. So Gunner's going to smoke a brisket, he announced earlier this week. So he did it yesterday. So he sends me pictures. And he charred the hell out of it. So he sends me these pictures, and I said, "Man, you burned the brisket." He's like, "I did not." I'm like, "Dude, did somebody poke your eyes out? Are you okay?" He's like, "My eyes are fine." I'm like, "Well, why is the brisket black? Why is it like charred, thick, black?" He's like, "It's not." And I said, "What is all that black stuff then?" Oh, I'm like, "Bro, I know charred when I see it. That's charred." He's like, "It is not." So, you know what? You know Gunner's mom saying, "Hey, when you argue with an idiot, who's really the idiot?" So, I'm not going to argue with him. So I say, "Okay, fine." So now this morning I get up and I text that picture to our group of five of us. And I said, I burned the steak last night. So now I get the, "Dude, what did you do? What a fool." Like, so now I'm getting those rubes to comment on Mike's steak, right? So it says, here's what I post. I post a picture Mike sent me. "I charred the steak last night. Pissed." Right? Montana man, "The work is burned." From F-18 man, "That blows ass. Better under than over. No recovery. Now, because that's not enough, I know these rubes. If I defend myself and attack them a little bit, they'll come back. Okay? So here's what I say. Everybody needs to settle the fuck down, okay? It's not that burned. Response. "I don't see any pink left in it. That's pretty burned. Me, get your eyes checked." So anyway, yeah. So the Gunner didn't believe me. He is yet to make an appearance in the chat room, though. Alright? So not sure. He's probably got a stomachache or something because he ate that charred brisket. He probably can't get out of bed yet. So, yeah. So there, corroborated evidence, man. I'm not the only one who thinks that. Right? When the rubes think that you burned it, guess what? The verdict is in. You burned it. Okay. With all of that said, this is dedicated to the Marines and sailors, and the airmen that participated in the Koh Tang Island operation, the rescue of the crew of the SS Mayaguez, a container ship, and the ship itself. To anybody who reads what you did, and again, we all feel your pain, but in terms of that you'll forever be haunted by leaving three Marines there. But that's not the story of Koh Tang Island. That is not the story of Koh Tang Island. In fact, one of the rubes is calling right now. This is the Montana rube. Is that burned or what?
That is burned. You need to put foil on the brisket at some point in the smoking process to avoid that.
Well, he does not believe that's burned. So you can imagine the discussion that he and I got into when I said, "Why'd you burn it? It's not burned." I'm like, "Oh, really? It looks like Atlanta after Sherman went through it."
It's even if it's smoked, it's going to be a little black on the outside. Put some foil on it, and it's still supposed to have some pink in it. Otherwise, it's freaking burned.
Okay, so is a quarter inch of char on the exterior, is that a sign that it's well done, or what?
That's a sign that it's a rookie smoker.
No, you know, I'll tell you what. He sent me a picture of his. He sent me a picture of his smoker. It looks like a small locomotive, man. It's got a chimney. It's got like smokestacks. It's got these long barrel compartments. I was like, whoa, who drove a locomotive into your patio? He's like, that's my grill.
I got one of them.
Yeah. Yeah,
got one.
And then you know, Mike. Then he gets belligerent. He got belligerent over the fact that I said it was burned. It's not burned. I'm like, okay. So then my thought was, let me get the Rubes involved in this, right? But
let's take this out to the public.
Exactly. Let me get the Rubes involved, and then. But he's yet to make an appearance because I'm sure he's probably under the. Under the weather after eating all that char. That's not good for you, is it?
No, it'll give you a freaking heartburn to hell, man.
Yeah, you can't wash, you know, as a man who likes his liquor. Montana Man is in our group. He's the boozer in our group. So, I'm not sure if you'd like to be introduced that way, but it's all right. Even a lot of beer could not wash that heartburn down.
No, that'll make it worse. Yeah, that's gonna. You'll feel that overnight. You'll wake up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning with a freaking burning chest after eating that. Yeah, that's rookie smoking there. You need to foil that brisket at some point, or you're gonna get that quarter inch of charcoal on the outside of your meat.
Okay, now F-18 guy, who just got back from a cruise with his wife. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
talk about me being the boozer. I mean, did you see the pictures of their little cruise?
No, I didn't see any of them.
You don't go to his friggin' Facebook page.
Oh my god!
Seems like they lived in the martini bar. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a shocker. This is from F-18 man. My problem is I start drinking too much beer inside the house, and I go back and check on it. And I forgot how long it has been. Mac doesn't drink beer, so I'm not quite sure what he was doing. Yeah, that's because Mac didn't burn it, butthead. Gunner did. Yeah, and I don't know. And Gunner's not afraid of a beer, but he takes his cooking pretty seriously, right? Gunner's pretty serious foodie.
Yeah, you would think that of all people, he wouldn't forget the timer on that, I'm positive. So I think he just didn't. Rapid, and that's critical in the brisket stuff to get right. I mean, you've got to have your shit together. And it's a day-long event. You know, it's a 10-hour, 12-hour process on one of those smokers Gunner's got.
Yeah, but, you know, come on. He's not a rookie to that. And he knows that the key to that is you're going to slow cook that thing and you're not going to burn it. You know, you're going to sear it to give it that little bit of crisp, but after that, you're slow cooking. Come on, man. Even I know that. Even I know that. So give us a weather update for Montana. Well, first of all, are you in Montana or Idaho?
Montana, heading to take the truck in for a recall.
The $80,000 truck got recalled? Well, man, there's a lot of components on that shit thing, man. There's a lot going on.
There's plenty of dead. My dad always drove piece of shit cars when I was growing up. I said, look, why are we driving this piece of shit Volkswagen Rabbit diesel? And he said, because there's not much that can go wrong on it. I said, all right, that makes sense. And now that I've bought a truck that's got more shit to go wrong on, kind of hearing those words again as I get to the dealership.
Really? And so how's the piece of shit truck in Idaho running?
Oh man, you could freaking drop that thing off a cliff and it would crank back up. Oh man!
How much did that thing cost you? How much did the POS and the Idaho POS cost you?
$2,000. That thing. You can do anything to it. That's why I got it. I'm like, I don't feel bad throwing, you know, round, you know. 14-inch rounds of wood off the edge of a cliff into the back of it, you know? You don't even give a shit.
It just takes a beat and keeps on. It's a Timex, man. It's a Timex.
Yeah, I had to have one because you know, you spend this much money on a truck, and then you're like, well, I can't even go into the woods and get a load of firewood with it. I'm too afraid to freaking put anything in it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's. I think in retrospect, it's not a truck. It's like a Cadillac that looks like a truck.
Yeah, it'll haul the hell out of some cows, though. I mean, that's what I do use it for. Is whenever I'm moving the cattle around, it's the way to go. It'll pull anything. But you hate to put the dogs in it, even.
The dogs inside.
Yeah, cow dog rolls inside.
Really? That's a lot of dog hair in an $80,000 interior. I'm not sure how that's working out.
Yeah, no, it's not good. And when we got to go back to Idaho, we take the Norwegian Elkhound, which is like a fucking air bomb. Twice a year, that thing just comes apart. And then the Jack Russell, obviously, crawling all over the place.
Fat Jack.
Scratching everything. Yeah, it's a tenuous trip when me, the wife, and the three dogs are in the expensive truck, and I look back last time coming home, and the Elkhound's licking the windows. I was like, Jesus Christ. Everybody get out of my truck.
I got to go take it and get it detailed for $40 now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, that interview yesterday was pretty good. Pretty amazing C2 structure. That's the one thing I stopped on that C2 slide, and I was like, good God. How did they make, I mean, three different types of dotted lines on that C2 slide.
In Mark Toll's paper?
Yeah. I was like, how the hell? I couldn't figure out who worked for who, and I stared at it for 10 minutes.
Yeah. So, yeah, and this is really the first foray into joint, right? I wouldn't even call them special ops, rapid ops, because it isn't a special op yet, because we don't even have those capabilities. And so for the first time in terms of, you know, electronic equipment, the National Command Authority can get patched into these tactical nets, right? And then you have MAR-4 PAC involved in it as well, giving tactical orders, right? And then you have the core command of Air Force Command Group down in Thailand that gets put in charge of it, and then they have an airborne C-130, right, that's going to command and control. They don't even go to the confirmation brief. They don't have call signs. They don't have freaks. They don't have shit. Again, the sad but hilarious, you know, moment is when the USS Wilson checks on station, you know, approaches the island, and after getting the Mayaguez underway under its own power, first towing it, then getting it underway on its own power, then they come to the island, and that guy's a baller. He checks in, and the airborne guys tell him, yeah, go to 10,000 feet and stay there. We'll be right with you. Like, yeah, bro, this is a ship, okay? The USS was a key part of that. That means United States Ship Wilson. Oh, my bad. Yeah, so that's the kind of shit show. And then that airborne command and control, they don't contribute to the fight the whole day. They are overwhelmed by requests for information from higher headquarters, and they do not contribute the whole day. The guy who really pulls it together is a Air Force captain named Undorf, who shows up in an OV-10 Bronco, was not tasked, but they were monitoring what was going on. He gets in his OV-10, and he flies out to Koh Tang along with his wingman, and they organize the battlefield, organize the fire support, and then they let it rip. And it's these, and Montana Man, special operation guy, and you can see what a shit show, yes?
Oh, God, yeah. And you'd think we learned in the 80s the Iran hostage rescue is where that whole joint, we started to think joint just for that, how that abortion went down. And you'd have thought we'd have, well, I guess that was afterwards.
So that
we
was after.
And then we did it again in the 80s, though.
Yeah.
With the hostage rescue into Iran. I mean, Marine helicopters in there freaking running into each other in the landing zone.
Yeah.
I mean, God.
Yeah.
And that was the birth of Jigsaw, which, you know, it made everybody start thinking anyway and talking.
Yeah, but again, if you would ask me before, you know, again, I've had some, I mean, intellectually awesome experiences with Allmarine Radio. The epiphany of learning about Me Lie, you know, and then these other different things. But the two greatest epiphanies I've had in terms of specific events are Me Lie and Mayaguez. Things that were fundamentally different than the veneer knowledge that I had. Had led me to believe. And again, it should have been a military humiliation for the United States. It should have been a failed effort. And the crew was never on Koh Tang Island. You know? At some point in the day, they get put on a boat, and the boat comes blasting into, you know, through the Gulf of Thailand and gets seen, and they're waving, "Hey, they set us free!" Right? And then these Marines and these Air Force pilots are, how about Bob, First Lieutenant Bob Blau landing his 53 at night on the postage stamp of the USS Harold E. Holt for the first time ever so he can turn around and go back and get the next load after his helicopter's been shot to shit three times.
The amazing part is that he's still flying the helicopter in synchronization with the ship movement while his wheels are on the ship. So he's only got, you know, a little bit of pressure on those wheels while these guys are unloading and they're freaking reloading ammo and water back on him. And he's basically in coordination flying at night, the same course and speed at a 45 degree angle as the ship he's touching. I listened to that and said, how can you do that?
No, I've got to get him on to hear his thoughts. And again, you know, Ben Hoffman said he deserved the Medal of Honor. Why the Air Force didn't put him in for it? He said that there was some of those pilots didn't follow, you know, their higher headquarters instructions because they knew what was in front of them, and they did what they should have done. But those guys are adamant that yeah, he absolutely deserves the Medal of Honor. So interesting shit. All right, give us a weather update before I let you go.
It's snowing, patchy snow, and cool enough to make me worry about new baby calves hitting the ground, not getting warmed up. So,
uh-oh.
Spring's trying to show up, but winter's still screwing around and kind of messing my calving operation up a little bit, but not horrible bad.
Not horrible bad, just a little bit bad? Bad,
yeah.
enough bad to be concerned.
Yeah, not enough bad to wake up in the middle of the night and go check. A little bit early and scurry out there, see if anything grows to the ground.
All right. Well, don't screw it up. Pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Opening day of baseball. You ready for this?
Yeah, I am ready. I've been waiting for it.
All right. I'll stand by. Get ready to rename the Green Monster. What? All right. Have a good day. I got to go. There you have it, Montana Man. Montana Man. Verdict's in, man. Gunner. Come on. Get your shit together. All right. This is dedicated to the Marines, the sailors, and the airmen in the Koh Tang Island operation.
Thank you. know, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. Check the weather and a few headlines. All right, mostly cloudy and 54 in Quantico. Mostly sunny and 72 already at Camp Lejeune. Cloudy and 55 in Granbury, Texas. Clouds and 34 degrees in Big Timber, Montana. Although you just heard Montana man say, snowing up there. 60 degrees in 29 Palms, so warming up a little bit. Sunny and 46 at Camp Pendleton. Clouds, dark, and 70 in Okinawa, so warming up a little bit there. Marja, cloudy and 85. And dark, warming up there as well. Currently, cloudy, 55 degrees, on our way to 73 degrees on the opening day of baseball season. That's right. Yankees up in Toronto. All right, let me read you some headlines from Marine Corps Times. Marine Force Reserve Chaplain, Marfor Res Chaplain, fired. No explanation given. No further details are available due to an ongoing investigation into the matter. So, Chaplain fired. The Secretary of the VA, he got let go yesterday. And the President's, the guy who's been the attending physician, career naval officer, was picked to lead the VA. Yeah, pretty interesting little choice. Admiral Ronnie Jackson. Most of us will recall after the President had his physical, Admiral Jackson went on TV and what, for like 45 minutes, answered every question about the President's health. Right? remember CNN and their crew were saying that the President was mentally unstable and all the rest of that stuff. So he went on to talk about his physical. So, yeah, he's going to lead the VA. Why not? Why not? Oh, we didn't have the administrative. Look, the VA has been a shit show for a long time. What you need is a great, you know, military leader. And I don't know Ronnie Jackson, but every report I've seen about the guy is good. And so why not? Veteran kills himself in St. Louis at a VA medical center waiting room. So yeah, this is a bad story. Happened early Monday morning at 4:19 a.m. He committed suicide inside the hospital waiting room. So no further details available about that. And then one more story. Naval Academy booted a plebe out for using a racial slur in some kind of chat room with some of his classmates. And then again, the Vietnam Memorial Wall honoring the 5th Marine Regiment is already out here on the West Coast. So they will begin assembling that thing, I want to say, tomorrow. The ground has already been prepared, but if you haven't seen it, you can just do a search on Vietnam Memorial 5th Marines, and you'll see the images of it, and it's awesome. It's awesome. Very, very beautiful, and to include where it's going to sit and the names of every Navy and Marine, every sailor and Marine that were killed fighting under the battle colors of the 5th Marine Regiment in Vietnam. So those guys that have raised that money, I'm still trying to connect with the guy who escorted it out here. You already heard from one of them. And that is Nick War. They raised close to $400,000 to eternally memorialize their comrades who fought under the battle colors of the fighting 5th Marine Regiment. So that's Marine Corps Times. Let's see. Early Bird, maybe? No? Top five stories in the Early Bird. One, Army marked this soldier as a deserter, but he actually died in a car crash on post. Number two, Shulkin out. Trump fires VA secretary after weeks of controversy. Shulkin seemed, like a competent guy when he took the post. But you can't go on a boondoggle trip, take your wife, spend a bunch of money, and then not come clean on it. So, and again, was that something that has been usual, customary, and reasonable at the VA? Is that where Shulkin learned that? And then opponents there ousted him for it? Time will tell. Three, laxious arms controls drive Turkish fake news over Afrin. Number four, Army of 01101111:, the making of a cyber battalion. So it talks about that. And again, the whole cyber thing, I'm confused by it. You know, I just saw a story about Marines trying to cyberproof their vehicles, that they could be taken over, steered and commandeered somehow, or shut off by somebody online. So anyway, what do they call that? The Internet of Things. Yeah, and somebody can gain access to that and whatnot. So anyway, and the fifth story, Kim Jong-un says he is committed to Korean denuclearization in Beijing talks. So again, this is in the South China Morning Post, and it's President Trump expressed optimism yesterday after a call from President Xi. So really interesting, this act that we do with the Chinese. And we need them. Obviously, we need their help in this. They have never, been inclined to help us. And, interesting times we live in, and we'll see as this thing plays out. But President was optimistic and tweeted that he was looking forward to the meeting. A couple other things, South China Sea that I keep my eye on. The Chinese carrier joins a massive Navy show of force in the South China Sea. So the Chinese had scheduled this exercise, then they sent all their ships down there, blah, 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 blah. Again, South China Sea is very, very interesting when you watch the combination of economic extortion and then military intimidation that the Chinese are waging down there. And what they're essentially telling the Philippines and everybody else is, you're not entitled to your UN-signed, internationally observed economic exclusion zone off your coast. We have declared that belongs to us, to include a set of islands 150 miles off the Filipino coast. So anyway, one more story that appeared in the Orange County Register before we get James Ferguson on. And this story, it happened in California with reservists who reenlisted to go forward with bonuses, and evidently they were not entitled to the bonuses. Okay? So this story, Camp Pendleton's civilian police must pay back thousands after a DOD error. Matt Hughes served as an infantryman in the Marine Corps for a decade. He wanted to continue his service to the community and hoped to find a job as a police officer. After applying for multiple law enforcement agencies in Orange and Los Angeles counties, being told budget cuts were stalling job opportunities, Hughes learned Camp Pendleton was hiring civilian police to provide security alongside Marines and federal officers. In 2009, he got a job. Now, 9 years later, he's being told to pay back nearly $40,000 in overpayment for his services. Hughes, 38, of Mission Viejo, is a patrol sergeant and one of 60 civilian police officers at the Provost Marshal's office at Camp Pendleton, who on Friday, March 23rd, were told they have to pay back tens of thousands of dollars each to the federal government due to a glitch. Individual debts range from $12,000 to $80,000. The average overpayment was $3,500 annually, according to Robert Ritchie, president of the Police Officers Union, the National Federation of Federal Employees. So, that, you know, this kind of stuff sucks. Whose error was it? Did these guys know that it was an error and they kept the money anyway? Or was it your computer error that did it? And so nobody said anything, you didn't discover it, and now you want all your money back. I have issues with that. You know, most of these people are living paycheck to paycheck. So where are they going to get the money? Take out a loan to pay you back because of your utter incompetence? So we'll see where that goes. In California, what they ultimately did was they were going to begin pay checkages for National Guards. And these guys are guys that went forward and fought under these bonuses. And they were going to get their pay checked, or they were going to get their taxes docked and all the rest of the stuff that the federal government can do. Ultimately, that was forgiven. So we'll see what happens with this. These kind of stories bother me. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. More Vol Marine Radio coming up next on a Thursday edition, opening day of baseball season, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.